At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Artificial intelligence, artificial generative intelligence, AI, AGI, quantum computing. These are mysterious terms where we are told again and again there is a race between the People's Republic of China, the United States of America, and its European allies. My watcher of this contest is Brandon Weikert, author of Winning Space and other distinguished publications. We are watching both AI, AGI, and then over here in the world of the future, we're watching quantum. Right now, there is an interview I recommend to everyone, full-length interview in the Financial Times by one of their young correspondents, talking to Christopher Bishop. He is in Cambridge, Great Britain. He is in charge of Microsoft's team that are looking at applications of AI for science research. That is what they're emphasizing. But at the same time, he takes us down the road of how did we get here? Brandon, a very good evening to you. Microsoft very quietly is doing hard science with AI. The opinion of Mr. Bishop is that chemistry, physics, biology, and astronomy will all benefit enormously, probably more than anything else, including copy editing my daily work with AI. Is that your opinion, Brandon? Is that opinion that's widely held, that it's science where the frontier is? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. Thanks for having me. Yes, I think that if my personal opinion, clearly the opinion of this gentleman, and I think many people in the hard sciences field are now coming around to this idea that AI is probably going to be the most consequential over the long term. In the hard sciences, you're going to be able to use AI to quickly maybe overcome some of the most, you know, hardest problems to solve in mathematics. You could use AI to create new possibilities in terms of creating new metamaterials for new airplanes and things like that, maybe creating a new form of propulsion. The possibilities are truly limitless. And I think that's what this interview was getting at. And Microsoft is at the bleeding edge now of the hard sciences revolution with AI.
Christopher Bishop does us a favor of identifying three phases of the development of AI to get to where we are today, with Claude listening in to me right now, with Aura of Grok listening in to me right now, and Brendan is in conversations through Twitter with Grok. Mm-hmm. We have AI around us, and what are they listening for? How did they get here? I will go through and ask you to explain what Mr. Bishop is addressing. He says the first phase was on a smaller scale than today. A lot of excitement around neural nets. Neural nets. That was the first phase. What is a neural net, Brendan?
Well, it's basically exactly what it sounds like. It is basically a computerized, trying to mimic at the computer level the workings of the human brain. You're basically taking, you're connecting different units or nodes through artificial neurons to try to create an artificial brain, a lot like Mr. Data on some level from Star Trek The Next Generation.
And the neural net turned out to be a false start. The second phase, the field of neural nets, went into the background, said Mr. Bishop. Now they moved on to something, and he cites a man named Jeff Hinton. All these names will be on statues of 500 years from now, but right now we're dealing with them the first time.
Built by robots.
As if this guy, Galileo Galilei, was important. You understand. The second phase is called deep learning. What is that?
Yeah, it's basically where the new form of learning for AI is basically exposing it to as much raw data as possible so that it can basically absorb it and then learn off of that massive amount of data. And this is sort of how the language models are working. You're basically exposing them to a litany of new concepts that can be found easily on the internet, that can be found, you know, easily accessible, and then basically having those programs learn it and then figure out how to manipulate that data.
This can be spooky the first time you run into it. Here's an example. Brandon has written a lot of distinguished books. One of them is Winning Space, about the space race, boosters, SpaceX, that sort of thing. So I asked Claude, have you read Brandon's book? Claude said, no, but I'm happy to summarize it for you. And then he went on to say, Brandon Weikert's on your program a lot, talking about and listing the topics Brandon and I talk about. Would you like me to write some questions for him if you're going to talk about winning space again? This is Claude volunteering all this. Brandon, the first time you meet it, it's spooky. After that, it becomes entertaining. Is that an example of deep learning? Claude remembered things that I did not tell him to remember. I also didn't tell him to read my guest list every night, Claude, and take down notes. I didn't tell him to do that.
Yeah, that is an example of basically they're now the machine is now it has accessed the data, the raw data, and it's now manipulating the data to conjure up things like, would you like to go over your guest list now? It's sort of prompting you now. So it's gone from the receive mode to now the output mode. And this is sort of the nature of the learning beast. With my experience, I like to use Grok on Twitter. I did for fun, you know, ask Grok to give a breakdown of my four books, and quite disturbingly, it didn't just give me a synopsis, which it did. It did more than that. It actually did chapter by chapter breakdown, and it assessed, and then it asked if I wanted to hear any reviews and takes on the book. So it now was bringing in even more information and data about the topic.
Third phase, the same technology that led to a breakthrough in computer vision has led to a breakthrough in speech recognition. Then we started to apply it to other fields. What does that mean?
Well, so basically, this is what we're getting at when we talked about the Financial Times interview with the gentleman from Christopher Bishop from Microsoft. Basically, they started out groups like ChatGPT focusing really on language models. Now they're sort of upscaling it to other subjects, to other areas of study like the hard sciences. So language was sort of the first major input. It's learning the languages. Now they're going beyond that. They're going into things like metamaterials and new forms of exploration into new industries.
So it's not just a talking ghost anymore. Going to be a research tool.
That's what Microsoft in particular wants. And actually, I think in the long term, and that's just my personal opinion, I think that's probably the best long-term investment, because mastering language is going to knock, unfortunately, writers such as myself, probably it might knock us out of business, but that's not enough. They're going to need to have something more sustainable, and being able to help develop the new great innovations of our future, that's obviously the best use for this technology.
You bring to my attention, we have a minute, that copyright is a challenge, and the Tony Blair Institute is dealing with it. It's making a pitch. What is the copyright challenge for AI?
Well, as we were talking about, some of these programs are learning off of gaining access to proprietary copywritten information, such as, you know, my fear is that these programs access, say, a book that I've written, and it can give somebody asking about it, the whole breakdown of my book without that person ever having to purchase my book and pay me for my expertise, rather paying the AI company or getting it for free. And basically, it's a free ride off of, and that's what the Blair Institute was highlighting, is there's a real concern. Interestingly, though, the Blair Institute doesn't seem as concerned about this. And one of the criticisms of that study is that they didn't include any artists or writers in their expert panel on this.
Brandon Weikert, watching AI, AGI, and quantum. I'm John Batchelor.